Welcome back to the show. Still on break for a little bit longer. I'll be back and publishing regularly starting on the 21st. But until then, I thought I'd share a little bit of what I think of as an intermission episode featuring Jared Janes and Jason Snyder of the Both And podcast. The Both And podcast, if you haven't heard of it, occupies a similar niche in our kind of culture as this podcast does, as the Emerge podcast does. And we chat about podcasting as a spiritual practice and what it's like to be curators and creators in this cultural space. I hope you enjoy the conversation. And if you haven't checked out the Both And podcast already, I'm going to leave a link to two of Jared and Jason's favorite episodes in the show notes. So be sure and check that out as you're waiting for the next episode of Emerge. Okay, enjoy this episode of Emerge with Jared and Jason from the Both And podcast.
A conversation that's already started. That's pretty interesting.
Well, I just pressed record, so
nice.
It's happening now. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, so why are you in the beginning?
Hey, you do. I suggested that kind of possible exploration of our roles in this emerging subculture that, you know, the names have been suggested, like the kind of meta-modern or whatever community, I don't even know, that we are playing within. But I also want to kind of just give a little bit of space at the beginning of this conversation, just to sense into, I know that both of you listen to my podcast, I listen to your podcast, you know, we have a history together, and just kind of like, pause and see if there are any other topics or things that are alive for you that we might want to bring into this space.
The cool thing about these conversations is that they are kind of like a jumping off point for all of our interests, and even the people that we're talking to tend to kind of fall into that category. It's like, oh, okay, who's interesting at this moment? Whose thinking are we resonating with? And so it seems to be a conduit. It kind of leads to all paths in my intellectual and kind of spiritual ventures these days.
Yeah.
At this point, I'm at a point in my life where I really don't know where we're going with. I don't know where I'm going with my life, and where we're going with the podcast. And so I cannot answer that question currently.
So you're in like a macro liminal space right now, huh?
Sort of. It's interesting. I'm in a space where I was telling Daniel this earlier, where, you know, I went from a community where, you know, I felt like it was just like multi-layered, long-term friendships, new friends being made. You know, there was just, you know, many different kind of smaller social circles that intersected, and it was just very alive, and I felt very invigorated. And I went from that. In the last few months, I've been, I moved with my wife to Chile, and it's just temporary, but it's been like I've had to face my own existential self, which I've done many times in the past. And it's, you know, I've had to like kind of, you know, battle with like loneliness and depression. And it's really one effect of that is it's really kind of, whereas before I felt like I was kind of just flowing and felt like I was, you know, new ideas were popping up and the next logical kind of intellectual or social or communal, you know, action was obvious. Now it's more like I don't know what I'm doing. Like I don't know where I'm at. And before I was like, it doesn't matter. Like it's just happening. And now it was just kind of like, oh well, I was flowing, and now I'm just kind of like, I just feel kind of lost. So it's more of an effort to like, okay, what is my interest? It's a lot more effort to create like where should I be going, because a lot of it has to do with where I'm at.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. What's coming up for me as I hear you say that is like, even from the beginning, the reason I chose to call my podcast Emerge was that I wanted to choose a kind of brand that was had an infinite scope, right? That I could put in anything that I was currently interested in, right? So there's a way in which it's about like what's emerging in the world, but it's more really for me about what's emerging as being quite interesting to me in my life. Mm-hmm. And I noticed that like there are times where it's very easy for me to access like what's interesting, what's alive, what's like calling to be explored. And there are other times where it just feels like that's just not available to me. Mm-hmm. Like I'm actually going through one of those periods right now with the podcast. Like I brought the kind of inquiry to a certain place and now I'm like, where do I go from here? And the avenue is not obvious to me right now.
Right, right. Yeah, that's one of the things I love so much about your podcast, Daniel, from the beginning is I think one of the first few podcasts I listened to was with the Jordan Greenhall one, and you guys were talking about liminal space, creating the space where you don't really know what the next step is. And I guess, you know, on the one hand, it can be exciting. And when things are arising naturally, it's exciting. But the flip side can also happen, which I think I'm finding out in my life too, where it's like, oh, what if nothing comes? Like, what if there's just like, you're just kind of staring into the void and then nothing's arising. And that's, you know, and I think that's okay too, right? Like we don't always have to have, what is the cutting edge of like, you know, where we think society is going and the next stage of human evolution. And those things, you know, those things will come when they come, but they're not just kind of like, they're not commodities either, right? Mm-hmm. We're not commodity machines.
For sure. Well, and something that I'm kind of observing from even maybe a more macro space as we're talking about a lot of the interactions in this metamodern or meta-rational, whatever we're calling it. Like you said, I don't know what name makes the most sense. I think I default to metamodern just because it's maybe the most broad. So it feels a little safe to navigate. So many of the conversations that we hear that we've been getting into with people who are kind of on the same wavelength always end up in this very, you know, what's post liminal space. How does the openness and kind of emptiness that seems to be inherent in so many of our perspectives, how does that then turn back into something more directed or goal oriented? I don't know that's where I find all of these conversations arriving lately, and maybe, you know, there's an individual element here as well, because you know the spiritual path seems to be filled with some of the same waxes and wanes of knowing where we're headed and how much control we're perceiving at the time.
Yeah. 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 It does. I notice that same kind of pattern both in the, so I think I notice it certainly in the conversations I have, also in my own practice and experience and relationship to this whole kind of cultural movement. And then I think, and this might just be a projection, I'd be curious to hear how you two are experiencing it, but I feel like to a certain degree, I experience it happening in the cultural milieu too, where there was at a certain point a real like kind of at least a felt sense on my part of like, oh, there's all this new stuff, we're like getting it, like who's been doing this work, who's a part of this kind of emerging network. And then there was a kind of like it feels like we're headed into somewhat of a dissolution phase, even just a small one perhaps, in terms of the subculture. But then again, that could be a total projection on my part. I'm curious if you two experience that, or if you even think it's an interesting idea to try to read that into like the discourse that's happening right now.
Well, I mean, one thing I've noticed, I mean, it is, you know, like how much about our reflections on the culture is a reflection of where we're at ourselves, right? So like, I cannot identify any, like I resonate with that idea that this kind of new, you know, meta-modern kind of space, integral space movement. You know, I resonate when you say it's going through kind of a dissolution phase, but at the same time, I'm also going through a dissolution phase in my own life. And so I'm not sure that it's not just, like you said, my own projection. And if I was still in a community that I felt, you know, that I was thriving in and supported, that I wouldn't be like, what are you guys talking about? Like, there's so much going on. There's, you know, and, you know, ideas shooting out of my ears. And so, yeah, I wonder, you know, how much of it, you know, is Jared, I'd be interested to see your perspective, because maybe both me and Daniel have been going through like transitions, and maybe we're like, it's changing our perspective.
Well, unfortunately, I don't think I can juxtapose it much, because I've been in a similar space, but from a slightly different perspective, I guess, where like I've had this kind of vast relief in not knowing what is happening at this moment. Most of this is just a very personal spiritual thing, where I've control is something that has always kind of come in waves, and kind of disintegrates. And so it's in one of those disintegration phases right now. But as opposed to it being disorienting or any kind, there's really not much negative, content that's coming up with it. So it's all very kind of, it's very comforting. So you know, I'm kind of like getting really cozy in this liminal cloud that I've been floating in lately. I also see some of that same reflection. And so, what I'm saying is maybe my lens isn't that much different than your guys's. So who knows? We need an impartial observer to this conversation. We'll have to call in our audience.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so I it's interesting, because I don't experience it personally as really that much of an issue. Like I feel quite comfortable in that emptiness. Mm-hmm. But then I like, when I take on my identity as like podcaster curator, I'm like, oh shit, like I gotta provide. I gotta come up with some cool stuff that's emerging or something. And so I find that identity is actually kind of at odds with that felt sense of like, oh, I can just like slip into the void, like sweet relief of the void, you know? And so I'd be curious if that's alive for you, or how you relate to that too.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's you know, there's been a lot of discussion around, you know, there's like waking up, but then, you know, that's only like half of the journey. Like waking up into kind of a non-dual emptiness space, you know, you can kind of just float around there and kind of just drift by. But to actually, like, I don't know, figure out how to translate that into being an agent in the world who's making decisions again, like that's like, you know, people describe waking down, I guess, is a phrase people use. It's figuring out, you know, how to live in both worlds, and it's a long process. It's not.
Well, and for me, the interesting thing is just that So I've been like half-heartedly producing content on a number of different platforms and forms over the past 10 years, probably in little fits and starts. And so much of my content creation process was over conceptualized and over intellectualized. And, you know, I was really kind of captured by, I think, some of that, that personal branding element of the startup world, which was something that I had kind of previously been interested in. I'm actually, for the first time, feel like I don't know. Yeah. I have no idea what I'm presenting either, but for some reason it feels comfortable to me, because I've been so constricted and like really having an idea of what I had to say and how it was packaged and what its goal was and everything. So it's the same kind of thing is happening in both of those areas for me at this moment.
Yeah. To go back to your original question, Daniel, about like, where do we kind of, you know, what's arising in terms of like being, like you said, curators, and trying to, you know, trying to find what, you know, what is the next step if we're going to survive as a civilization, and maybe even thrive. And going back to like our original, you know, kind of the origin story of our podcast, you know, it's related to this idea of mimetic mediation. And it's interesting that I don't think we've really done much mimetic mediation at all. We've really had like a lot of people that we largely agree with on the podcast, you know, people that are kind of in this space and we're kind of just jiving. But, you know, I think one direction that we, you know, I think we're starting to go a little bit like, but one direction we can continue to go is to bring people on who aren't, you know, like it's not just immediately like, okay, you know, if I mention a few keywords like metamodern integral, like, you know, everyone kind of knows what that's about. And there's a certain mm-hmm. level of familiarity or the contemplative world, but bringing people who just have a kind of a very fundamentally different frame of reference, but are still, you know, they're still onto something. And it might be something that, you know, that is a little bit abrasive to us, you know, so like it might be something that's very, you know, what I would say is postmodern, like just very kind of like critical mm-hmm. theory oriented and a lot of things that I resonate with, but then part of it is like, you know, like, well, you know, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Like there's some good things mm-hmm. about modernity too, you know, or even people who are like, you know, kind of neo-traditional, right? Like there seems to be, you know, kind of a meta-modern neo-traditional movement.
Totally.
That, you know, on the one hand is kind of scares the shit out of me because, you know, I see it as perhaps proto-fascist, but, you know, if I'm being honest, but at the same time, I think it's a voice that has a lot of things to say, right? And it's grounded in experience. And so I think, you know, in terms of direction, you know, wanting to bring people on who aren't kind of, you know, don't immediately resonate with the kind of the space we've created, but we can have a conversation and it'll be really a very interesting conversation.
Yeah. That has been one of the main pieces of feedback that I've gotten about my kind of podcasting style is that I don't bring on people who I disagree with. I don't often disagree with my guests, right? Like there's a kind of, I think of it as a form of appreciative inquiry that I practice typically on the show.
Right.
But I notice that it seems like every show or media production within this kind of cultural space seems to be doing that kind of practice as a default, right? Where they're like bringing on people and they're kind of doing this co-exploratory thing where they're kind of yes-anding each other, which I have a sense is like extremely useful. Obviously, that's why I do it. But there's also, there's maybe, I mean, I know for me personally, like I'm slowly getting over my fear of conflict. And so that fear probably has colored the way that I create. I guess I'm curious, Jason or Jared, like, you know, what's your understanding of like, let's say you did have somebody who was from this kind of, I don't think it's quite alt-right, but like meta-right or I don't know what the frame is, but like you have somebody like that mm-hmm. on, you know, how do you... What's your goal in that conversation, and how do you make sure that you're not amplifying perspectives that are actually kind of dangerous?
Yeah, that's to get to your first point about like, you know, so I don't think like having these difficult conversations means that the podcast needs to sound like there's a lot of conflict, right? Like I think we've had a couple people on which, at least for me, I wouldn't naturally, you know, agree with, or there'd be a lot of areas of disagreement. And I felt both conversations. So one was with this guy, Garrett Daly, and another one was with actually our last one, which we haven't released yet, which was She is more of a kind of a critical theory, you know, so from kind of two different directions, and he was more of, I would say, meta right. But we, you know, the conversation still went very smoothly. I felt like there was no signs of conflict at all. Like it was more, it was an exploratory conversation. And so I think, you know, I don't think like visible signs of conflict are necessarily a sign that you're making progress, right? Like you could have difficult conversations that don't sound difficult at all, right? And that might actually be a sign of skillfulness, or it could be a sign of, you know, just avoiding the difficult issues as well. So, but to your latter point, that's something that I've actually worried about a lot is, you know, in my engaging with people that I disagree with, you know, I do wonder, like, am I amplifying their voice? You know, am I helping spreading a message that I don't agree with and maybe I even find dangerous. But I feel like those messages are being spread anyway. And so it's, you know, it's like they're being differentiated in the language of like differentiation and integration, right? Like they're being differentiated anyway. The media landscape is giving them a voice, you know, and it's such that it's kind of, you know, auto amplifying, you know, it's just, it's not something that if you just don't talk about it, it's going to go away. Right. And so it's better to, you know, I feel like maybe it's better to like try and integrate these different perspectives by having these conversations and developing relationships. And there is a risk, but yeah.
And it's funny, just kind of adding a few things in there too, that I think are kind of important or interesting. And how I see some of these conversations unraveling and the way I frame them. One of the things that kind of also was one of the key things that we thought was really interesting about Jason and I particularly starting a podcast was just because I came from a far more kind of libertarian and kind of ended up in this meta space. And it seems to be pretty common for it usually to come from the left. While I am very aware of the responsibility of how we challenge ideas or maybe how we have those conversations, my default is usually to like be, you know, have this radical transparency. And I think in order for us to not become so siloed, there has to be a blurring of some of these ideological barriers. And the moment that somebody, you know, that is maybe from a traditionalist or neo-traditionalist right, talks to people who are seen in this contemplative space as being far more traditionally left. It's just like that is a drop in the bucket to kind of, you know, build a bit of a bridge, an ideological bridge, and loosen things up a little bit. And the more friendly and in good faith that conversation is, the more it kind of displays the fact that you know there's a lot of commonality and there's an opportunity for connection in all of those in pretty much any conversation that we find ourselves in.
Yeah. I mean, I was being a little bit, I think, provocative in the outset to the way I set this up, because like for me, like the neo-traditional perspective, like I feel a lot of sympathy and resonance with aspects of that. Kind of memeplex, right? Like there's parts of it that I'm like, yeah, like right on. Like that's clearly like you're compensating for something that's actually a little bit like deficient over here. And I'm down, you know, and I could totally see having conversations with folks from those space. You know, I would differentiate from there are probably between perspectives and persons, right? Like there are persons who I would not want to give a platform. Whereas there are and in the perspectives they may hold, if they were held by a different person, I would be more than happy to like talk about them and explore them and stuff. And I noticed that for me, like even in just saying that, there's a part of me where like I've been building this kind of brand, you know, and a lot of it is just what I think people are projecting onto the brand. But it's like if I then had those neo-traditionalists on and had a very open, sympathetic
exploratory conversation where I was exploring views that were part of my worldview, but might not be part of the listener's worldview, that there would be some kind of discord just in the audience response to those things. Yes, it's very interesting to do these kinds of explorations.
Well, and the other thing, you know, as you said, you were being on the provocative note. Anytime we even just talk about this tension, it's like we have to caricaturize what the these ideological framings. To that point, I don't think these conversations would go well if they really were as extreme as those caricatures present them. You know.
Yeah. Totally.
Well, so I mean, in my limited kind of attempts to kind of have conversations across, you know, I'd say ideological lines, but it's not like all ideological lines. It's more of like, you know, I'd say it's groups of people that have a clear like sense of that there's something wrong in the world, and they have a clear vision of where they want society to go. And so, but I find that people, at least in a conversational format, generally want to find common ground. At least that's in the limited experience I've had. And when you give, and this might be kind of a cliche, but like when you approach somebody sympathetically, like, you know, they're apt to do the same, and they're apt to kind of want to break down, you know, so like, you know, if you're in a reactive mode and like a neo-traditionalist, you know, when you mention the term feminism, you know, it's like alarm bells, alarm bells go off, and, you know, and there's a whole kind of, you know, and you can just have a huge fight over the term feminism and how horrible it is for society, or, you know, or how it's, you know, been good, you know, but if you kind of avoid these alarm bells, at least to begin with, and you kind of just get into like, well, what does that actually mean? Like, what are we talking about here? Are we talking about, you know, and there's still going to be some, you know, there's still going to be some disagreement, but I think there's a lot more willingness to kind of like, okay, like, I kind of see where you're coming from. I'm willing to give a little bit, you know, and, yeah, I mean, there's an example which I don't know if I want to give right now, which is different, but it might require setting up some context. But in this conversation that Jared and I just had, so we had a conversation with a lady who studies urban food systems in Africa, and part of her perspective is, as I think, you know, she sees, you know, she definitely sees kind of the mainstream development agenda of, especially for like USAID and in Africa, for example, of, you know, of promoting kind of like more top down, like supermarkets coming in, foreign direct investment. And, you know, and she's, you know, she's generally very critical of that. And, you know, she promotes a lot of things that we agree with, like that I agree with, and I think Jared does too, of like decentralized food systems and kind of emergent, you know, allowing kind of like emergent,
collaborative,
more systems oriented approaches. But like one question, you know, one thing that when we were having our conversation that just kept coming up in my mind was like, well, so are you just against supermarkets? Like, is, you know, are supermarkets just, you know, are they kind of unequivocally a bad thing? And when I brought that up, you know, she was like, well, you know, I like the supermarket in my, you know, in Michigan where I live, and, you know, so I don't think it's unequivocally bad, you know, and so that was kind of like an opening to have a more, I feel like a more nuanced conversation than if I would just, if I had just come in and said, well, you know, if I had just kind of like, you know, taken, you know, what I see her saying and the conversation she has about like, you know, it would come across as it's just unequivocally bad. Like, you know, anything that's not small scale basically is bad. Right. But because like it was, I don't know, it opened up the conversation to be more, a little bit more like both and-ish, you know, like no one size fits all solution, you know, yeah, anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it just, I think it just kind of softens the barriers that we constrict, especially when we have to verbalize something that is at least somewhat provocative or making some sort of statement. but yeah, it's the truth or the hardlineness of the barriers that we draw usually tend to be far more soft than we realize. And when conversations go well, I think it's like, it's creating some pliability and then kind of expanding them and kind of give them a bit of a workout. And that usually comes from a very, positive kind of intimate space and not this conflict. So yeah, kind of echoing Jason's point of most good conversations, even if you're disagreeing, are very, sound very polite and agreeable. And emphasis on the most. I'm sure there are always outliers.
Well, I mean, and I even say like in some cases, so is good conflict, right? Like good conflict can look quite gentle, actually, as you disagree and hold your
position. The art of conflict.
Yeah, totally. And then the other thing that was coming up for me is like, you know, I have reached out to some of those like very provocative, anonymous Twitter accounts that say like, that like, you know, kind of do a lot of, we'll say shit talking on Twitter. And just like, and I've talked to them like on a Zoom call. And in both cases that I'm thinking of, they were like really sweet people. And so there's this total there's this like real, disconnect, or the medium, there's a real medium is the message thing kind of going on, the constraints of the medium informing the way that communication happens. And
it would be very helpful if people like that we disagree with weren't such great, nice, sweet people.
I know.
It would make our job a lot easier to castigate them.
Yeah.
I've had similar experiences, and it's, you know, it's funny where, I think for a while there was this one guy where I was video calling with him, you know, I video called with him a few times. It's an account that I won't mention it, but it was a pretty well-known account. And like publicly we'd get into these like fights, but whenever we talked like over video call, it was just like, yeah, I mean, we're just like, it was great. You know, if anything, it was sometimes a little bit awkward, but it was just kind of like, oh, well, what do we talk about now? But it was just like, oh, how are you doing? You know, how's your family? And I don't know.
Well,
the anonymity too, it just allows for so much more creativity in how we express these like very, you know, caricaturized versions or elements of our personality. It's a fun exercise, I would assume. I guess I'll say I've never done it on an anonymous account, but it would be interesting to experiment with sometime.
Yeah, well, I sometimes like think about, you know, as I said, I think at the beginning of this conversation, you know, we all see that there's like more and more podcasts kind of emerging in this like meta whatever space, meta modernism, meta systematic, meta rationality, like I'm always curious, like where is this conversation going, or where is this kind of culture going? And one of the things that's coming up for me in this conversation is like, I think one of the gifts of this subculture that we're participating in is a kind of recognition of how systems, whatever systems or mediums you're participating in, kind of color the conversation that then ensues. And I think that what I notice, and I think what's implicit in what we're saying here, is that like real time, face-to-face or even audio-based conversations are able to move more in this kind of integrative direction. And I was thinking about this morning during breakfast here at the monastery. It's like there was a part of me when I started seeing more podcasts in this space that was like, oh no, they're like getting in on my territory, you know, like kind of being a little bit protective. But then like actually there's another part which I want to amplify more, which is like, no, like the more the merrier, you know, like I don't have time to listen to all these conversations, but like that they're happening and that people are listening to them and participating in them. Like there's a kind of like intrinsic goodness in that. And it's like, I want more and more people to actually host podcasts, to have these conversations, to feel like they can just reach out to another Twitter user or somebody and be like, hey, I want to have a conversation, and to kind of have a sense of like, and the models, right, from listening to other podcasts, perhaps, about like how to do that, how that can go down well, and how that can actually shift everybody's perspectives that are taking part in the conversation.
Yeah.
Well, there, I feel like, so this, I think, there was somebody who tweeted yesterday about, you know, he was complaining that like podcasts are kind of taking away from real conversations with people around you. But I think that, you know, if we think of podcasts not as like, we're producing, this content, and then we're kind of distributing it to everybody who's, you know, who's listening to our content. But if we think of it more of like, we're just, you know, we're all part of this culture, and we're having conversations and we're recording them. And, you know, whoever wants to dip in and listen to the conversation whenever they want, they can, right? And, you know, and they can also, you know, they if they feel motivated to, they want to have conversations and they want to get feedback beyond just, you know, their immediate interlocutor. I mean, creating, you know, on the one hand, it's, you know, we're not, at least, you know, I mean, it might be different for you, Daniel, because I think your podcast was really kind of the pioneering podcast. And so it kind of cleared the space for a lot of, you know, the new podcasts that are coming now. But, you know, if not all of us are thinking we're going to be the next Sam Harris Waking Up podcast, right? Like, and make a living doing this. But you know, so if we understand that, you know, you can't have everybody being a content creator and nobody a content consumer, right? And you know, make that make a living doing that. But if we think of it more of just like, no, this is just part of what we do, is our lifestyle. We create these conversations and we get feedback.
Sure.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it's a great thing.
Yeah. Something that's coming up for me, a few episodes ago, we had Nathan Schneider on, and we kind of like reversed roles, where he started asking us questions about what we were doing with this podcast. And it was actually kind of a strange conversation, because at the time, like, we had barely thought about it, and we were kind of, you know, very much thinking out loud.
I don't think I've thought about it much more than still very barely.
It did.
Anyway,
it sparked a lot of interest in me, and I think, Jason, we even right after that podcast, we recorded an episode between the two of us, where I had kind of said, hey, here's some things that I've been thinking about, and one of the main elements was, where are we going? And if we're going somewhere, there has to be some sort of key values or landmarks that we're headed towards. And we were basically saying like, well, I don't know, maybe this is one, and then we destroy it. And then, you know, it's kind of like, it's a really tough thing. The way I'm looking at it now is that if we have any candidates for values, I'd like to look at it more of, here are the intentions, and here are some of the outcomes that arise most often. And keeping in mind that could change at any moment. But if you're kind of keeping track, you do get a general sense of, you know, here's some theme that's coming up over and over again that seems to be connected. And one of those core themes that I personally really resonates with me is that these conversations, especially the posting them and sharing them and interacting on them, is kind of a form of, you know, group or cultural, maybe, you know, move it up a bit, subcultural, but maybe be more specific, a better title, a form of awareness generation, or, you know, it's kind of like a cultural meditation. And so, you know, we're talking about these memes and letting them marinate and interact with other things and other ideas, and just really keep creating as much of a broad space, a container, so that we can actually have better conversations. So that's something that just has been resonating with me, and I don't know, just throwing it out there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, a small thing that we've done that I really like, and it's just very simple, is, you know, before most podcasts, you know, asking, you know, saying, you know, posting on Twitter, like, you know, we're about to talk with this person. Do you have any recommended discussion topics? And it's quite a relief for me, because I often go into a conversation having really not much idea about what, you know, what I'm going to contribute, what I'm going to ask. You know, I often, you know, there, you know, oftentimes before podcasts, there's kind of like this like burst of fear of like, am I going to have anything to say? Like, I don't feel like I have anything to say. Like, I don't feel like I know anything. Like, I'm just, but having these people, you know, like maybe like five or six questions that, have, you know, or topics that have been asked that I can bring up, you know, and not only kind of, you know, it's a release valve, I feel like for me and Jared, for Jared and I, but it contributes to this kind of like, you know, I don't know, inclusivity of conversation, where, you know, it's, you know, part, you know, if all that I can do is relate what things other people are thinking and bounce them off people who are knowledgeable in some sphere or have things to say, you know, of course I want to contribute a little bit, but like, really, like, I don't know, when I'm feeling very like, just, you know, void, like, I can rely on that, and it seems to be a good way to help other people contribute and be involved.
Yeah, and the conversations kind of like take on this different flavor of infinitely being bigger, because it's not about just the people in that moment.
Yeah. I mean, what's coming up for me too is like another piece of what was alive for me when I started my podcast and has continued to be alive is this kind of idea of like the practice of conversation and like how to have beautiful conversations or worthwhile conversations. And increasingly I see that kind of can head in a lot of different directions, right? Like it practices like circling, create a different kind of beautiful conversation than the kinds of conversations that would be like I typically would have on my podcast, which produce, instead of like real deep intimacy, more something more like liminal understanding and intuitive insight or something, you know, like that. And I also want a presence like Peter Lindberg at the start of every episode of his podcast has a little like ritualistic declaration of his intentions with the conversation.
Right? Yeah.
And there's something I really appreciate that.
That's really cool.
And you know, I often will meditate. Or just not meditate. I'll just be like, we're going to be quiet for a minute before we start. I'll open it up, you know, when I feel like it's time. And there are all these little kind of like tweaks that and part of it, I think what's coming up for me now is I want to like name for my own journey. Like it's really, I've listened to podcasts for like 10 years. It's been one of the main ways that I've just like learned, that I've engaged the learning process for myself. And I really appreciate podcasts as a medium, but it's a whole different thing to create them. And it's so much more engaging, and like you have so much more skin in the game. Like the difference between like reading a book that you heard about on a podcast or reading a book because you know you're going to interview the author of the book is like, it's a very different thing. It like changes the way that you read that book. And it's like, I think that people think that making and releasing a podcast might be more involved than it is. Like it's really stupid simple these days, you know, like there's software there that just is trivial. It's just so trivial, you know, and people, even if nobody, if you don't have any listeners, people still want to be on your podcast.
Yeah.
Because like, people want to have good conversations.
Well, one thing that I've learned, I think, from doing this podcast is it's actually given me, it's given me a lot of humility, I think, because when you're having conversations, publicly, you know, like every week or every other week, you know, I get to a place where I'm saying something and I think to myself, I've already said this. Like I'm just recycling, you know, like it, because I'm making kind of my ideas, I'm putting them out there and they're kind of explicitly before me. It kind of takes me to the limit of what I know because I'm like, you just keep recycling, you know, the same phrase or the same kind of idea over and over. And even if, you know, other people don't notice, I notice. And so it's like, wow, I should learn some more. Like I should figure some things out. I should have more experiences so I can like, you know, have some real new things to contribute. And I think recognizing that and not just kind of resting in kind of a more amorphous kind of like, oh, I know things, you know, but like not actually reaching, you know, recognizing the limits of what I know has been good.
Totally.
Yeah. There seems to be a whole self-inquiry element to podcast this creation process, both, you know, doing the editing, recording, listening to yourself and being reflective about what's been said in the past, and then listening to it too. That's always, it's very, very revealing, and gives a different perspective on yourself. So it's been very valuable for me as well.
Yeah, I agree, Jason, with the humbling part of it. I think, you know, when I listen to a lot of podcasts, you know, there's a way in which listening to a podcast, and I think it's similar with like reading a book where you think you like know the thing you're hearing. And it's really easy if you don't have to externalize that to be like, yeah, you know, I know that. Like, I know how to talk about that. I kind of like arrive to that conclusion after work. But really, it's a kind of like minor ideological possession. And then you get into a conversation and you're like trying to access that knowledge. And you're like, actually, if I were to say that right now, it would be very like inauthentic. I would be just like parroting something. I have that experience quite a lot, actually. And that has been extremely valuable of being like, oh, am I really willing to say this even though I don't know that I believe it or that I don't know that it's like I can vouch for it in a sense. And so that's been really, really humbling and actually quite beautiful to realize like, oh, I just know a lot less than I thought I did.
Yeah. Yeah. And It's both recognizing the limits of my knowledge, as you said, and it's also recognizing it like you said, Jared, is kind of a form of self-inquiry where, you know, I might say something and then right after I'm like, wait, did I actually really like, where did that come from? Did I just say something in order to say it, or did I actually, was it something that I actually really deeply feel? And putting it out there and listening to yourself say it, and you're like, who is this person saying that thing? Like where is that coming from? Like, you know, it's that's also a humbling process of finding out the limits of your own authenticity and the limits of just base knowledge and things you can reference.
Yeah, it's funny to catch there's also that performative element to it too, where you can notice yourself entertaining. And it's just like, oh my God, what am I doing?
Yeah.
I need to learn how to, if I want to be entertaining, I need to learn how to sing. I need to do something better than say, you know, all the time.
Nice.
Oh man. I also love that our little meta circle prides ourselves on long silences.
I'll actually like in the pre-call, I'll be like with the guest, I'll say something like, if there's a long silence after you say something, don't worry. I'm just like considering what I'm going to say. I'll edit that out in post.
Well, I mean, going back to saying something in order to say it, right? Like the nice thing about long silences is it gives you some space to kind of, all right, is there something coming up? No. Is there something coming up? No. You know, there's something. Because when something comes up, I feel like I can talk for a long time, but you know, having that space to be able to access it is very, I know, can be very helpful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I find that typically that's a sign that a conversation has gone to a deep place, that there is that quality of and length of silence. And one thing, I'd be curious actually to hear perspectives from both of you on this. It's like, sometimes I'll be in that silence and the obvious thing to say will just emerge, right? It'll just come up and I'll just be like, oh, that's the thing I need to say, and I'll say it. Other times, a constellation of things kind of comes up, right? A variety of paths the conversation could then take, like kind of appear. And there's a sense of like making a choice between those paths. And I think it's curious, like how do you, if you have that experience, like do you have a sense of like where you choose to go? Like how do you orient to that kind of decision? If you have thoughts about that?
I think for me, it's just kind of dumbly chronological, where I have a thought, I'm like, okay. And then another thought that's along just a totally different line. And I usually, I don't know, for some reason, I'm very faithful to the chronological order that they came up with my mind. And so I kind of make note. And that's, yeah, that's just kind of like a very kind of similar, simple heuristic. I don't even know if it's being from an academic culture, but it's just more of like, I'm almost like giving, I'm paying respect to, like, for some reason, this came up in my mind and then this came up in my mind, and I'm paying respect to, you know, the order of that. And I don't know if there's anything to that or not.
Whoever raises their hand first.
Something like that. Yeah. It's like the sub selves, right? Like there's many different selves, and it's like, okay, you raise your hand first. All right, Susie.
we'll start from a place of agreement, and then we'll go into my own neuroses and anxiety.
right. Something like that.
Yeah, I guess I think this kind of actually speaks a bit in a kind of orthogonal way to decision making in general, since it's such a hot button here of being in a place of uncertainty and knowing that there isn't really a right answer, can either leave you twisted up in your mind, or in my case, as soon as that starts to arise, any kind of uncertainty in the mind, I just go straight to my body, and just, you know, just listen, it's not even listen. It's kind of feel into it, and then just lean into whatever feels right in the moment. But it's such a non-linguistic and non-conceptual thing it's very hard to verbalize. But you know, that's how I feel about, you know, both silences or choosing to, bring up some contentious topic, or to challenge a certain perspective in a certain way. Same move seems to be used over and over again.
Yeah.
Let the mind offer up something and then feel into the body.
Yeah. I feel you. And my sense is typically I go with the paths that that elicit the most like interest or curiosity or aliveness in my body. I think what I have intuitively done, and it's only recently become quite clear that I've been doing that. And I think I've been reconnecting with Otto Scharmer's theory. Are you either of you familiar with that framework?
No, I'm not.
Oh, it's really cool. It's really well worth looking into. But it's a kind of like group facilitation framework for innovation and insight. And one of the ideas is that there is in us this capacity to act from what is often referred to in that frame as the emerging future, that the future is actually kind of like in us waiting to be accessed in that frame, usually by like contemplative practice or by presence or by just spaciousness. And it's like, there's this way of learning to embody and act on behalf of the future that wants to be kind of birthed. And I noticed that like really good conversations come to this place where it feels like I'm a conduit for the conversation that's like already taken place or something. It sounds kind of silly to say, but there's like, it's like doing the next thing that allows this thing to actually become itself.
I love the visual that's coming up for me right now is that scene in Donnie Darko where he has the little kind of thing popping out of his chest that he's following. And he's kind of just like, "Whoa, this is where I'm going. Okay.
Yeah.
A sort of falling into the present or falling into the future.
Daniel, when you said you follow your kind of your interest, one thing that I thought of was so oftentimes the thing that's interesting to me is also very it's very kind of uncomfortable, or it's very you know, kind of coming from a neurotic part of myself, and so I'm wondering, how do you like when you talk about like what feels alive or what feels interesting or what has already occurred that you're just gonna manifest, like do you kind of, I don't know, more uncomfortable feelings or more, I don't know, I'm searching for the right word, like squeamish or, you know, something that's like, oh, that's just like my neurotic self that just wants to vent or just go on like a, you know, chase its own tail for a while. Like, how do you recognize, would you say, like what is interesting? And is it, would you say it's always a positive feeling, or is it some kind of optimal balance between feelings, or I don't know. Do you feel like unpacking that a little bit more?
Yeah. Maybe, probably need a little bit of quiet just to let that one.
Yeah.
Sit. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of different things that are coming up, and I really appreciate the question, Jason. Like one piece is like, I think it's just thousands of hours of contemplative practice, you know, that reveals that to a certain degree. And then, you know, reflecting on, what we were talking about with regards to conflict and like me seeing that, I actually tend to avoid conflict. I think that perhaps there's a way in which your capacity to have the conversation that sort of wants to take place and to embody that natural interest, like the breadth of that capacity expresses itself to the degree that you are yourself integrated with all the parts of yourself, right? So there might be a whole section of the human experience that doesn't get to express itself through you. And then you can't really like have those conversations so easily. So that's a big part of it. And the other thing that's coming up also is like a lot of, or a big inquiry for me over the past like year and a half has been around desire. And like, I think having a more kind of nuanced dharmic relationship, spiritual relationship to desire, the nature of desire, what desire is kind of like teleologically, it has been really helpful for me, kind of just like being willing to own whatever the interest is and kind of like trust that it's just going to do something that will be interesting, maybe, you know, and just sort of like trusting my desire in that way.
I've been kind of enamored lately with reading some Trungpa books. The Myth of Freedom, I believe it is the last one that I read. And a lot of the Vajrayana kind of tantric practices that are brought up really kind of feed into this as well. Once we've kind of developed enough of this piercing emptiness that can kind of quickly tear through conceptualization and go straight to kind of the energetic quality that it's actually embodied, the embodied energetic quality that's present. The move there seems to be to always lean into it and let it express itself. It can kind of be counterintuitive just because earlier on in this spiritual path, we have to kind of learn to release everything. So it's like, looking for things to release as opposed to looking for things to lean into. That evolution is something that I've noticed very present in my recent experience as well. It's like just leaning into the gravity, whether it's negative, positive, whatever it is, and just having faith that it will unfold itself in whatever creative way arises. And I love that. It's such a fascinating and interesting practice and seems to be very cathartic in ways as well.
That's interesting. I mean, it's interesting because part of doing that is not knowing, this goes back to not knowing whether, of course you can edit things out and stuff, but we haven't really done that, but not knowing whether you're going to go down a path, like a rabbit hole in your mind that, where you're going to feel embarrassed or you're going to feel ashamed. I think what you said, Daniel, about having a lot of, a lot of hours of contemplative practice and knowing you kind of get a certain familiarity with your tendencies and where things go. And so you can kind of, so that helps to manage, but at the same time, trusting, leaning into what is going on in your body, and leaning into that and letting things arise. It is itself a spiritual practice and it does require trust. And the fact that you're doing it while recording, it kind of raises the stakes a little bit, at least in your mind. I mean, in the grand scheme of things, probably not. who cares, right? Yeah. Like some people on Twitter think I'm kind of a weirdo. So, or some people who listen to the podcast think I'm a weirdo whatever.
Yeah.
But that could be also another benefit of this kind of culture that we're creating of have conversations and perhaps even record them and release them, and whoever else wants to engage, with something that's a little bit, it is a little bit vulnerable to do that.
I don't think there's, vulnerable is probably the one thing that sums up the whole process. There's no safety there. It is falling backwards into your own experience, however complicated and conflicted it can be, and just trying to look for that underlying quality of life or energy or whatever is present. It's always a fun discovery, but never know what you're getting. And then even the stories that we come up with to describe it are just such feeble attempts.
And by fun, I assume you mean oftentimes not fun.
fun like an adventure. Yes, yes.
Fun like how meditation is fun. Yeah.
Right. Fun how, going through the, dark night of the soul and having your whole sense of self, dissolve into the ether of the void is fun.
It's the samsaric dance. It's a beautiful thing in its own weird way. It's just not from within. Or well, right. Not as long as you're not trapped.
I mean, what's coming up for me is a desire to kind of articulate conversation as a practice in a way that people can actually see and understand. Because right now, I think most of the time people are motivated to start podcasts to grow an audience or something, or to just explore a topic. And I know that when I was thinking about starting a podcast, partly what I think enabled me to start the podcast was wanting a certain type of conversation, but not seeing it present. Right. But I don't think that needs to be how it is. Yeah. I think it can just be
I like this kind of conversation. I want there to be more of it. Like, I don't think we're going to run out of conversations. It's not like a limited resource, you know, like we could have many, many more conversations. I think it would actually be very good.
Well, it's kind of a disciplinary, it encourages me to have conversations, right? To reach out to people. And like you said before, Daniel, like people generally agree to be on a podcast. If you can, you know, if you can reach them. And, you know, I wouldn't be reaching out to all these people and having 60 to 90 minute conversations. And so it's kind of like a great excuse to, to do that, right? Like, you know, just for myself and anybody else who benefits from it. I mean, it forces me to kind of reach outside of my shell or my, you know, my comfort zone.
Yeah. And I think that within the context of like the meta modern space, like there is a way in which conversation itself is a kind of praxis that makes sense within the whole kind of gestalt of what we're trying to do together, how we kind of think about the world. And so it's like, there's a lot of like, it's in coherence, I think, with the larger view in a way that it might not be in the context of other subcultures. That's something coming up too.
Right. Just having, just the idea of, you know, having to put your ideas out there and explore ideas and not, you know, and not in a way where it's like a, you know, it's adversarial, but in a way where you're trying to do some kind of sense making. I agree. Slightly tangent to that. I mean, one thing that I was thinking about was, you know, I've already mentioned like a couple of things that it does for me in terms of like, you know, how it's helping me like I see it as a spiritual practice, but another way it does that is, you know, I often find that I think my kind of default stance towards things is kind of cynical and protective where I just kind of, you know, I wake up and, you know, perhaps kind of an initial stance is like, well, I have this protective shell and I think, oh, you know, all of these conversations people are having, it's like, whatever. It's like, doesn't matter. Like it just kind of like the sense of like, you know, I'd say it's a kind of a, you know, if I allow myself, I can become very nihilistic, I would say. And for me, having conversations, I feel like forces me out of nihilism. Like even if I go into, you know, sometimes I go into a conversation, I'm like, I'm in a great place. And sometimes, you know, I'm just kind of like, I'd say I'm in a cynical place and I'm, you know, perhaps asking questions and I just don't, I'm not really that into it. But I find in the course of the conversation, I generally, those layers of nihilism kind of go away, I think, you know, cause I'm talking with a real person and there's just something about communication in general that, you know, I guess, I don't know, gives me more skin in the game or makes me care, you know, more about the topics, you know, rather than if I was just, you know, always, you know, listening, but, you know, kind of not engaging or not.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I would say like one of the characteristics of nihilism since tends to be this kind of implicit separateness, this, you know, chaotic separate entities colliding with each other. So the moment that you're in resonance with another, it becomes a lot harder to even get those nihilistic tendencies to roll.
Yeah. Or just like, I mean, for me, it's just like, I'm separate from the world. I'm separate from these conversations, you know, it manifests as like, I'm above it. Right. Mm. And that's just kind of like a protective shell because, you know, of course, you know, you know, we're not above life, you know, we're not larger than life. And you can temporarily make yourself believe that, but it's not a sustainable, good place to go.
Hmm.
Yeah, I think the other piece I like that our conversation went to this place. I didn't expect it, but it's fun to reflect in a kind of sort of meta way about podcasting and our journeys with podcasting and the role it can play. And one thing I've noticed is that, like, I started, I think this is a kind of like a part of what you're saying. I hear you saying, Jason, is that, like, it's a curative for a kind of nihilism or flatness, but it also does like just amplify meaningfulness, right? Like, cause you're, you know, there's a way in which you just listening to the conversations and you feeling like, oh yeah, I'm really resonating with these ideas, this kind of conversation, like that itself is meaningful. And that's often like why we listen to what we listen to, right? Is it's like somehow meaningful to us. But then to then take the additional step of like doing something with your life that like confirms to yourself that this is meaningful to you, and also starts to recraft your identity as the kind of person who's actively participating in creating this meaningfulness in the world. It's been really interesting where like I feel like now I'm at the point with Emerge where people are like reflecting back to me this identity that I've kind of like created through this product or this project. And it's like then becoming more real to me, and I'm reflecting it out into the world. And there's this kind of like mirroring going on that's really meaningful. It's really beautiful to from the first person, like to be in that, to experience that.
It's like almost like creating an external accountability system where like your values, you put them out there and they get reflected back and they evolve as well. And now it's like, you know, people associate you with certain ideas and values. And at least, in, you know, speaking for myself, you know, it gives me less wiggle room to kind of like, you know, escape into my separate nihilistic kind of shell. Right. Cause it's like, you know, it's very painful to talk about things like these kind of, you know, kind of very broad, expansive ideas, and to be very cynical about it. Like you can do it for a little while, but it becomes very painful very quickly. And so to you know, avoid that pain, you actually just have to like kind of try and, you know, this is like, what if I believe this? Like what if I actually took this seriously? What if I put my skin in the game? And gave myself up a little bit.
Totally. And in the kind of like meta-modern irony sincerity thing, right? Like there's a way in which we're pretending to be nihilistic or we're pretending to live a life of meaning. And you're kind of like putting a stake in the ground where you're like, no, like I'm going to pretend this shit matters, you know, and that this is really important to me.